Two cohorts meet on a beach, marching forward to meet one another head on. Both are flying the same blue colors. There's no reason to fight. In fact, they are much stronger together. The soldier crabs combine their might to become an unassailable force. As individuals, they are humble, but together, they are like the flowing tides of life, death, and taxonomy. Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com/LDTaxonomy or click on donate on our website at LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about a creature that can walk, forward, and believe it or not, that's interesting about it. But more on that later. But it's a crab that can walk forward. Not typical.
Yeah, we're talking about the soldier crab.
Uh huh.
Crank that soldier crab.
Yeah, exactly right.
Do you remember when that was a song that people cared about?
Try to forget.
I don't understand it.
It's not meant for being understood.
It was never meant for our comprehension. Some things are above our ways.
it's also
called the marching crab, the semaphore crab, but we're gonna call it here the keyboard crab. There's another callback. It's keyboard cat. And the crustacean processing unit, aka the CPU.
The CPU, okay.
Yes.
What about science?
Are you braced? Gird thy loins for some taxonomy.
Okay.
The kingdom is one you know, love, and are in. The kingdom is Animalia. The phylum is Arthropoda. The subphylum is Crustacea. Joe's future daughter's name. The class is Malacostraca. And the order is Decapoda. 10 feet. The suborder is Pleocyamata. The family is Mycteridae. The genus is Mycteris. And the species is Longicarpus.
This sounds very Greek.
Longicarpus?
The other ones. No, the other ones.
Oh, okay. I was like, that sounds not Greek.
Mycteris, or whatever you said.
Mycteris?
Yeah.
That sounds like someone's name. This is Mick. He's Mycteris. It is also in the infraorder Brachyura, which is true crabs. So this is a true crab, as opposed to a fake one.
I would hate to talk about a fake crab.
Bibby loves imitation crab.
Oh yeah, when I was a kid, the Neptune salad. It's called Neptune salad now, but. Seafood and crab sub at Subway was my favorite sub. And thinking about it now, I'm still thinking about it fondly, but that's my heart is thinking about it fondly. My brain is like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that is a very odd choice for a child. For that to be their favorite Subway
it's
sandwich.
It's kind of like an Arby's beef and cheddar where like everything mixed together into a homogenized flavor and texture. It's like mac and cheese. Like It's all one thing. On and that's good for a child, I guess.
Well, it's like you have the option for like a meatball sub, and that's just like the go-to for people of all ages, but especially kids at Subway in particular. But no, you were the outlier looking for the seafood sub.
Yeah.
The imitation crab.
Yeah.
Neptune salad sub.
Neptune salad also just sounds like a terrible thing.
Yeah, that sounds like something that will 100% give you food poisoning on a cruise.
Yeah.
Oh, did you have the Neptune oysters? Oh. But yeah, it's time, since we're in the business of naming things, it's time for my favorite part of the show, Nitty Gritty Nomenclature, the part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature for the animal, which in this case is Micterus longicarpus? What does it mean in English? Does it mean A, long-wristed nose, B, marching long shell, C, blue beach wanderer, or D, long-legged burrower?
Long-legged burrower, final answer.
That is incorrect. That's me taking advantage of your recency bias.
There was another thing you're taking advantage of. The answer is
long-wristed nose.
The correct, the real reason was that I forgot the first two and did not think hearing them again would help me get the right answer. So I just chose the last one.
I took advantage of laziness and recency bias.
The right one.
No, it's long-wristed nose. Micterus is a nose, or like a rostrum, I suppose.
Long-wristed nose is a level of nonsense that I would have not picked it out of principle, even if I was sure it was correct.
It's like Micterus means nose, and longicarpus means long, and then carpus is wrist, like carpal tunnel.
Well, it's definitely so not it's long-wristed nose.
Nose, long wrist. It's long-wristed, and it's a nose. Micterus just means nose. It doesn't mean like nose-like thing. It doesn't mean nosy, nose-ish. It's just two nouns.
It's the long-wristed variety of nose crabs. Is what it is. Because it's genus and species.
This one is the nose, and it has, and this is the one with the long wrists. But none of these words mean crab, so I can't in good faith say long-wristed nose crab. It's not the translation. But,
well, yeah. Great.
Speaking of
long-wristed and nosedness, what the heck does this look like?
Okay. There we go. I was like, where are you going with this? It is an odd-looking crab. If you're picturing like a blue crab, the classic crab shape, this is not that. Although it is blue.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, the blue crab that you would normally eat. It's hard to explain. It does, so I'll start with the color. It has this powdery sky blue to bluish gray color. Although they can appear pale white after molting, they have a smooth carapace with like almost like a porcelain sheen to them. They have very long, delicate legs that seem spiderish more than crabbish, but maybe that's why they call this long-wristed. They have small black eyes that sit on short stalks. Like a lot of crabs do have that. They have these large oversized claws. Which are always kind of faced downward rather than being outward. So this crab has a very spider-like look, mm-hmm. With more of a ball shape than that flat, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a dome.
Like loaf of bread shape, or like slice of Pepperidge Farm.
It's bread. A cake ball, not a sandwich shape.
It's a cake pop.
Which
makes me hungry.
It also has purple knees.
Yes. So it's blue. It's got this blue carapace, purple knees, white everywhere else. It's in a ball shape, and it's got these downward facing pincers that are just, you know, just straight down, like drilling into the sand kind of direction. And then it's just got these two little ice stalks popping out the top of his head. So this is a very odd looking animal, and it looks even weirder when there's 1,000 of them together. So yeah, I hope that painted a good picture, but speaking of pictures, go look at one if you're not driving. This guy is a weird looking dude.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a small crab. I'd put it in the small category. A larger variant of the small crab category. There we go. Because there's obviously crabs that are super, super small, but this is definitely not like the coconut crab or the spider crab or anything like that. So how big is it, Joe?
Good question. Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listeners part of the show, the part of the show when we present the animal's size and dimensions in relatable terms to a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you when you send an audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. I keep trying to think of a third thing, but based on the animal, but chittering is the best you can get with crab.
Clacking? You can
clickety clackety.
You can clack its pincers.
We don't have any measure up intro this week, but that means we have the great privilege of hearing from an animal, and Carlos is to guess who it is. Without further ado, the listeners part of the show.
Oscar, over here! I gotta talk to you.
I'll be right there. Hey, you.
What's the, who's that?
I have no idea what I'm hearing.
The second voice was a better, is not the crab. It's a crab. The second one is not the voice, but it is a better hint as to what this is from.
I got, that was just a wall of sound. Then it's, I've not seen this, whatever it is.
It's from Shark Tale.
Okay, I've not seen Shark Tale.
And the character is Crazy Joe. He's like a homeless crab.
A homeless crab.
He's like a trash can crab, but what they should have done is made him a hermit crab with a trash can for a shell. But they didn't. He's just a crab in a trash can. Wasted potential.
He's Oscar the Grouch.
Right. Crab style. Let's talk about their body size. Their males are slightly larger. They're up to 25 millimeters. Oh, wait, hold on. Before we talk about that, since this is, I want to talk about this is listener interaction part of the show. Sometimes. We got a message from Rowan. Patron Rowan messaged on Patreon. He has a question. What jobs do you guys have? I think one of you has something to do with buildings and houses, but I do not know. Very observant. I don't think we talk about buildings and houses.
I've probably talked something about that. Construction.
We must have. But it's not animals. I'll tell you that. Unfortunately not.
I know. It's that would boring be cool though.
Office things.
Can you imagine if we were like, if we worked at zoos or like in research facilities for zoological research. That'd be awesome. But that was my then, dream when I was a kid.
Me too.
I wanted to be a zoologist.
Me too. I wanted to be a paleontologist.
Really?
Or and then a marine biologist. But
cool.
But then would we want to do the podcast? That would be it. Would be work.
That's true. Oh, but then we would have a lot more insight, and we could speak with confidence and authority.
Is it better to be an enthusiast with motivation, or an expert? Where this is old hat.
With confidence.
With confidence. Yeah, but our jobs are... We both used to be in marketing, and now we're not. But it's office stuff.
Yeah, just like corporate middle management stuff. It's computer stuff that that gives me the time and flexibility to research for the show.
Exactly right.
And also on the side, right. I do real estate stuff on the side.
Which is the house stuff that...
Which is, the construction.
Been observed.
I'm trying to do real estate stuff on the side.
Correct. I think the question was more like, was about the, like, what, do we work with animals? I don't, if that was the heart of the question, then the answer is unfortunately no.
An unfortunate, but yet resounding no. But I work with, three children. That counts. I work with just absolute beasts. And I have two dogs.
But the good news is that no matter what your job is, you can still do explore things you're interested in. That's the good news.
That's right.
That's right.
We also had a response from Joy and Calvin about with following up on our Great Gatsby discussion.
Oh,
and
did
our
we?
Our comments on Steinbeck, like the not just his like authorship style, but the not just his books, but just the style of writing a novel where normal people do bad things and then everyone dies. And then that's just how the story ends. And she said that Calvin mentioned they was supposed to read The Pearl, which is a short story by Steinbeck.
Mm-hmm.
They asked him, okay, how does it end? And he's like, oh yeah, they sell the pearl and everyone goes home happy. And they're like, yeah, you didn't read it. All I have to know is know who wrote it to know that that's not true. You didn't read it.
I like a Steinbeck book. I've never read The Pearl.
It's really short. And
is it a
short
story?
Well, I mean, just prepare. It's not a short story. It's like a novella.
Kind of like Of Mice and Men. It's really short.
Yeah, I think it's... I don't know if it's around... I don't know how much... whether it's the same size or not. I have not read Of Mice and Men. I definitely... Spark noted that one.
It's so short. If you've absorbed any of it through pop culture, you've absorbed most of it.
Yeah, I was a Spark Notes fiend in school. I don't recommend that to all of the school age people listening. Should have read my books, but I was a little scoundrel. Just especially when the book was a romance book, I was like, yeah, I'm not reading Jane Eyre. I'm gonna spark note that, and oh, guess what? They bad things happen, and they love each other. C'est la vie, I suppose.
It's funny because my favorite Steinbeck book is an absolute tome. The East of Eden is like extremely long compared to his most famous book, which is Mice and Men, or Grapes of Wrath. I think that's a little longer though.
I was spared Grapes of Wrath, except for the VeggieTales version. But yeah, it's just funny that like if that author in particular. If someone says, and then they lived happily ever after, then you know they didn't read it.
Oh, like, yeah, and they... And
it's like, did you... Like a Werner Herzog movie. It's like, yeah, if they lived happily ever after, then you didn't watch the movie.
They also sent a measure up, which we can use next week.
Yeah, let's do that.
You
spared me revisiting Shark Tale.
Whenever there is an animal in the pot, it's good to save the measure ups for, like, when there is an animal we have that is, there is no pop culture reference to it at all.
Yeah, like a obscure shrimp or something like that.
Well, I would just use the shrimp from
Shark Tale. Is there a shrimp in that movie too?
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Joy, for sending the measure up. We'll use it. We'll use them all, unless they're somehow obscene. We'll use them all. Anything.
Yeah,
you send
that's
us.
True.
Anyway, the body, not the Joy. I'm saying, I was talking to the entire, all of the listeners. Yeah, Joy would never send anything that was not above board.
Yeah. Well, we will. There, we have no reason not to just. To use all the measure ups, unless they would force us to put that little E next to the podcast.
We've gone E-less.
We've gone E-less all these years, and we will continue to do so.
unless we're rated E for everyone, that's it.
Yeah, as long as it's not E for explicit.
Yeah, or explicit.
But we will explicitly tell you some animal facts.
That's true. The male body size of these crabs is up to 25 millimeters, or a little less than an inch across, 9.8 in diameter. In the summer of 2021, Italian brothers Alberto and Giuseppe Rosso earned a Guinness World Record after growing the world's heaviest Carmen cherry. At 33 grams, or 1.16 ounces, proving once again, an ounce is the heaviest thing of all time.
The largest cherry in the world is just over 1 ounce.
Can you believe it's over an ounce? An ounce would be insane, but it's over an ounce.
Yeah, that's deadly. That's blunt force trauma right there.
True or false, 5 crab lengths go into the circumference of that cherry.
The circumference. So the 5 crab diameters go into the circumference of the largest cherry.
Yeah. A 33 gram cherry. What could be the circumference of such a thing?
Goodness. I cannot. I had a good concept of diameter. But circumference, I have, because you can't see it all at one time.
Yeah.
It's hard to visually imagine how long the line in of a circle is.
Yeah, what's the circumference of my head? Is it equal to the length of my body? It might as well be, that for all I know.
And the formulas for that have long since eroded out of my brain.
Pi r squared.
That's... Or is it 2 pi r?
Pythagorean theorem. Pi r squared, I think. Pi r squared.
Is it pi r squared or 2 pi r? One of those is to find the circumference.
Oh, pi r squared is the area of a circle. So it might be 2 pi
r. So it's 2 pi r. So it's 2 pi r for the circumference. So that gives me something to work with. I'm imagining this is 2 inches across. So that means the 2 inch diameter. So that would give it a radius of 1 inch. 1 times pi, or we'll do 2 times pi. And then I guess times one. 6.2 inches is the diameter or the circumference of this cherry. What was the answer, the true or false answer I had to work with?
5 crab lengths.
I'm going to say false. Seems like it's a little longer.
Final answer?
That it would take 6 crabs, not 5, to get around this cherry. Yes, final answer.
The correct answer is true. The circumference was 5.
It's just a dense cherry. Yeah. This is a regular looking cherry. I've seen cherries that big before. I feel like
I saw that it would look like a big cherry, but it wasn't like I want a cherry the size of an apple. That's what I want to be the biggest cherry of all time.
I know, but
it was just slightly larger.
Even a cherry the size of a large strawberry would work for me. But like that's,
you know what's really, cherries are really good. It's been a while since I've had a fresh cherry.
I'm not a fan of cherry flavor.
You know,
cherry
it's
flavored
not,
things.
It's not a cherry flavored thing. This cherry,
but like
cherries,
I like maraschino cherries.
No, that's not a real cherry. You got to get a pitted cherry. Eat around the pit. Spit the pit.
Spit the pit.
Let's talk about this.
I've been eating a lot of kiwis and peaches recently.
A kiwi.
Those are good. And pineapple, man. Pineapple.
Well, you like
so
stone
good.
Fruit.
Stone fruit? What is
that's
that?
That's what a peach is. A peach and a plum. This has got a rock in the middle.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't eat the rock. We just got a bunch of plums.
Plums are great.
But I've been saving them for the kids because they've been eating those. But we're branching out to new fruits because I've been eating bananas and strawberries and blueberries.
You want to get to that one, the point of that one influencer that's eating every fruit.
I've eaten every fruit, every single one.
Well, he's already eaten every fruit, so there's no more fruit for you.
Every fruit in the world already has a bite out of it because he's gotten to it. All the fruit goes through him.
It is funny. Every kind of and every is a huge numerical difference.
That's the difference. That's the like the only reason why all of the animals fit on the ark, right? It's every kind and not
instead of every animal.
Right.
Well, if it was every animal, it was, yeah, two of each kind.
But two of every species?
You'd be full up on bugs alone.
It'd be, yeah, we're full up on bugs here. There's not enough room for elephants. So yeah. I guess we're just not going to have elephants for the rest of time. Too many
bugs. It's hard to have a ship full of bugs and even one elephant.
Right. Because then you're going to have a ship full of just an elephant and dead bugs.
There's a lot of extinctions. Let's talk about the size of a female body. They're slightly smaller at 11.2 millimeters. The other one was 25 millimeters, so like half the size.
Okay.
The tallest tree in Australia is a mountain ash. It's named Centurion. It's in the eucalyptus family. And they reach their maximum height in about 200 years. True or false? 8,893 crabs go into the height of Centurion. If I've ever... Centurion? Naming your tallest tree Centurion?
That's perfect.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like aping Hyperion.
Oh. Well, we have the General Sherman, right? It's one of our big redwoods.
Yes. And is the tree Hyperion? Yeah, and its location is secret.
We have a secret Hyperion tree. I like Centurion as a tree. That's good. It shows how much everyone's always thinking about the Roman Empire.
I've seen the general. I went to the general to save some time.
Oh, that's we can't do that joke twice in a row.
We can, and we have.
No. People will start throwing tomatoes at us through their phones. And then they're just going to have a tomato covered phone. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say true because this number is unfathomable to me. I can't even imagine a number as high as 8,000.
Could you imagine 8,000 ounces? That's an unfathomable number.
Yeah, that's...
It's like a neutron star.
It's a black hole. It's time dilation around something like that.
Final answer, true?
Yeah, true.
The correct answer is true. The tree stands at 99 meters or 326 feet.
Tall tree.
Yeah, pretty tall. It's...
For an Australian tree.
It's pretty... The Australians made note that it reaches its maximum height in 200 years, which is way faster than a redwood.
I didn't realize this was a race.
It's a race. But now no koalas can get up there to enjoy those toxic staples.
Not without a catapult.
Now that's thinking with physics. It's catapult our koala bears to the highest.
We had an episode where they dropped they parachuted beavers into like northern Canada.
True.
So why can't we catapult koalas into the top of Centurion so they can enjoy sleeping for like 23 and a half hours a day and peeing on themselves?
They don't know enough to resist or to not enjoy it for at least
they can know enough to have a good time.
Do you have any fast facts?
I do. So as we've talked about, this guy lives in Australia, especially Queensland, New South Wales, parts of Western Australia. I'm probably absolutely butchering it. It's been a while since I've read a Bluey book to the kids, so my Australian accent is starting to lose its luster. They like sandy tidal flats, estuaries, mangrove edges, sheltered beaches where they can burrow into the wet sand as the tides go in and out. They are deposit feeders. They sift microscopic algae, bacteria, detritus, organic material from the sand using their specialized mouth parts. And they will come up in large groups as the tide falls, and then they will march across the mud flaps. This is why they're also called the marching crab. And so they'll move in these large groups, kind of like the Christmas Island crab, and they'll be shoveling sand into their mouths to get the algae and bacteria and organic matter out of the sand, and then they will spit out a nice little sand pellet behind them. So, they kind of aerate the sand, it would seem. Their mating season is during the warmer months. Like a lot of crabs, females will carry the fertilized eggs under their abdomen in like a clutch until the larva hatch into the ocean. Soldier crabs are very gregarious, as I mentioned. They get together in large groups, sometimes groups up to several thousand. So they do share a lot in common with the Christmas Island crab in this case, except the Christmas Island crab is red and this one is blue. Get it right. Red, blue. We're on the blue ones. They live for about 2 to 4 years in the wild, and they have, unless it's cut tragically short by birds like gulls, herons, shorebirds, also larger fish, rays, octopuses, larger crabs. They all like a little blue ping pong ball snack, a pale blue dot. They are, when danger shows up, that entire swarm of hundreds or thousands can just vanish underground. They can just dig themselves into a military retreat, a tactical retreat under the sand. Which is interesting to watch if you want to watch it on YouTube. And that's all I got.
Well, I'm calling this major fact. Could crabs compute? Soldier crabs, like you mentioned, naturally form cohesive swarms. When two groups meet in the wilderness, they don't fight, they don't scatter. Although individual crabs will wander somewhat unpredictably, the swarm behaves like a single entity. When two swarms meet, they merge and continue moving in a direction determined by the combined motion of both groups. So it's swarming crab style. There are a lot of reasons to swarm in nature. Their safety in numbers. They have the appearance of a larger creature. There are more eyes to detect nature. Dangerous nature. If you got a big group, you got a lot of eyeballs watching out for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But this predictable rule-following behavior is also the kind of thing that can be harnessed for computation. And researchers at the Kobe University in Japan and the University of West of England built a crab computer.
Interesting little co-op there.
Yeah. The East and West come together to turn animals into computer. So what do I mean computer? Computers process information with electricity using transistors. Each transistor follows one simple rule. If I receive a certain electrical signal, I'll let the electricity pass. Otherwise, I won't. So the transistor doesn't know anything, but it can follow a rule. And when you connect billions of these tiny little switches together, they perform logic. So an individual transistor doesn't need to know anything about the task that's being performed. They just need to be able to follow a simple rule. Binary. This is what binary is all about. Yes or no. This is one or zero. The concept of a crab computer is that you replace the electricity with crabs.
That is the age-old question. That's what Benjamin Franklin initially thought. He's like, this electricity stuff is pretty cool, but what if it was crabs?
Right. But he was limited by the technology of his time.
I can't wait till it's crabs. That's what the directors of Pirates of the Caribbean said. They were just like, the second movie's almost over, but I can't wait till it's crabs.
So the research team built a maze of channels and guided groups of about 40 crabs using an overhead shadow that mimicked a predator. And the crabs instinctively moved away from the shadow, allowing researchers to direct the swarm through the maze. And depending on whether one or two swarms entered a junction, the merged swarm exited along different paths, implementing simple logic gates like an OR gate and an AND gate. So what does that mean? An OR gates are the fundamental building blocks of all digital computers. So if you imagine you release one crab swarm from the left, if input A equals 1, and you release another swarm from the right, if input B equals 1. So what if they come to an OR gate? If either swarm arrives, the swarm exits the output. No swarm enters, no output. One swarm enters, output. Both swarms enter, still output. That's what OR is. There's a no, there's a... There's one, and then there's both. That's OR. So what if they come to an AND gate? To make an AND gate, they redesign the channels so that one, when both swarms collide together, they continue into the output corridor. If one swarm, there's no output. If both swarms, there's output. That's AND. Or an AND. So now you've got crabs doing the building blocks of computation. So what were the results? They set out to build these gates, these logic gates, and see if the crabs could, you know, reliably get the right answer. So crab-based OR gates worked reliably, but AND gates were a little bit less consistent. Still, the experiments demonstrated that living swarms of animals can perform the fundamental logical operations required for computation, even though crabs have no idea what's being computed.
They're just cogs in the machine.
They're just cogs in the machine. So the experiment shows something more interesting about, obviously, we're not going to use crabs for computers. Electricity works way better. And silicone does these logic, like this, ands and ors way faster than crabs can.
You know, like almost at the speed of light.
Right.
A little bit faster than crabs.
Yeah. But it tells us something interesting about swarm intelligence, quote unquote. The experiment shows us how the difference between individuals and groups of animals. The computation doesn't come from the intelligence of individual crabs. You're creating logic, but the one crab in a maze wouldn't work. An individual crab is an animal with its own moment-to-moment choices. It's way too unpredictable. They might turn around. They might stop to groom. They might go to sleep. They're not even getting to the gates. They're not, you know, the computer needs the collective behavior of many crabs to be reliable. So soldier crabs are a good example of swarm intelligence. A group can outperform an individual because of averaging. If we're trying to guess, like if human beings were trying to guess the jelly beans in a jar, I might guess way too high. Carlos, you might guess way too low. But the average of everyone listening right now, 500 guesses, let's say, is pretty close to accurate because of averaging. The law of averages. A crab swarms. It swarms following simple instincts. They need to stay near other crabs. They need to avoid predators. They need to move away from shadows, and they need to maintain spacing. So individuals are making those decisions, but as a swarm, they're better than the individual at spotting and reacting to danger. And it helps avoid predators and stay alive. But interestingly enough, like a computer error, groups can make bad decisions based on bad inputs. The group may copy an individual that is making an error, and then everyone's in trouble. So predators
It's groupthink.
It's groupthink.
It's the satanic panic.
Well, it's like predators exploit this in nature, like humpback whales that are herding a school of fish using a bubble net. They're herding them into a single cluster that's easy to take a huge gulp out of. So they're using swarm intelligence against the swarm, against the animal.
They're using real intelligence against swarm intelligence.
Exactly right. In that case, a maverick fish might survive if he goes against the swarm.
The fish that's the star of the Pixar movie, it will survive because he's just not like other fish. Right. He likes inventions.
And then in humans, the bystander effect is a good example of swarm intelligence kind of failing against individual logic and reason, where like somebody like falls on the train tracks and then everybody is not making a move because there's a big crowd there and you're assuming somebody more qualified is going to come and help. Or is this a bit? Is this a movie? What am I seeing right now? Are they filming something? Why isn't anyone helping? There must be a reason. And that's happened many times before. So swarm intelligence. Yeah. There's a reason it works, but it's not because the individuals are smart. It's because the swarm is making good decisions based on the law of averages. And predictable like electricity.
But I'm going to be honest, if I saw someone fall on the train tracks, I would assume that I'm about to make things worse if I go there. If I jumped out of the train tracks and try to help, like I am about to just really blow up this situation here. Either two people are going to die or I'm going to injure this person further and someone's going to be very mad at me that I did this.
But if you were the only person on the train platform and there was you might be more likely to do something. Reach down, you know, something right. like that.
Yeah, yeah. I would be more likely to do something if I was the only person. But it's like, okay, someone qualified needs to handle this because I don't know what to do. That person could have a broken neck. I try to pick them up off the train tracks and they die or something. So no. But I'd yell. I'd point at them and yell like, someone help that person. I'd be that guy.
Well, at least that might shake somebody else out of bystander effect. It's not a bit. It's not a joke. It's real. You just got to say that. There's no one to help but you. And you just point at somebody who looks...
Point at the most official and capable person on the platform.
But that's all I got. Crab computers. All right.
Crab computers. Extremely inefficient, like that goldfish that managed to finally beat Pokemon Sapphire. But can be done. For you out there in podcast, yeah, that was the soldier crab. Chill out off the coast of Australia. Spit out some nice sand pellets and get with your buddies to form a supercomputer like the soldier crab here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy. Maybe you should see it like an Australian. So chill out on the coast of Australia. Spit out some nice sand pellets and get with your buddies to form a supercomputer like the soldier crab here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy.
Hey Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
My favorite in the world podcast.
Close enough. I wonder if 40 goldfish could the average decisions or movements of 40 goldfish would solve it, would beat the game faster.